How's it going, everybody? Brian Alverson, Landstorm here. Figure 4 Daily, December 18, 2024. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot to talk about today. It is our monthly live Q&A, and we are streaming live here on YouTube. And once people start getting their questions in, away we shall go. But in the meantime, what's going on, Lance?
Oh, not too much. Just finished up the final resolution and our final TV taping heading into Genesis, January 19th, if anyone's interested, from Dallas, Texas. And finished my Christmas shopping today. Had one last thing to pick up. So things are good. It's cold as all get out, but Chinook's hitting tomorrow, I think. We're supposed to get back up. Pushing 40 degrees Fahrenheit for the American listeners.
40, God, move, dude. It's too cold.
Well, really don't have a lot of options within Canada.
Well, I guess so. There's always, once you move to Florida, no income tax, the rest of the wrestlers are there.
You can't just move to a foreign country without...
I thought you were like a dual citizen by now.
No. But even still, my wife and kids aren't.
Hmm. Well, that's tough then, I guess.
I suppose if we become the 51st state, I can move anywhere I want.
Wow. Well, what happened on Impact? Anything to tell us about?
Nothing specifically from the tapings, because they won't be airing for a while yet.
We don't care about spoilers here.
Yeah, but we had two really good houses at center stage. It was all over the internet, so it's not like I'm stooging off. I got to see AJ Styles and say hi to him. He stopped by to say hi to a lot of people, so it was a good weekend.
Wow.
I saw quite a few people, actually.
Really? Who else did you see?
Raven, for one.
How's he doing?
He's doing well. Who else did I see? I think I saw Bill Barons and David Young and a few others.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to start some questions here. If you're listening to us live on YouTube, all you have to do is put your questions in that little chat box right there. And we will answer them here on the air. And the first question here is from Grayson, who says, thoughts on Tessa Blanchard, who has returned to TNA?
Actually, I was talking with a friend of mine about this. I've always liked Tessa. I first met her back at a NWA Fan Fest convention thing, one of the ones I did with Les back in the day in Charlotte, I think. So I've known her for a long time, worked with her briefly, her last and my first TNA run. And I do think that at some point people deserve second chances. I don't know if mistakes, no matter how bad you make when you're young, should follow you the rest of your life. So I'm hoping it will work out both for her and for everyone, and we'll see how things go.
Was she met with open arms backstage? Mixed reaction? Any scoops?
Well, the thing is, it's wrestling, right? Everybody's going to react professionally, and if you were against it, you probably just would avoid her. So I only saw positive responses and interactions. But again, you know, most people don't want to make a scene, so if there were people who weren't happy about it, they kept quiet. But all I saw were positive reactions. And clearly she's a very talented worker. And again, I think I said this before on the show. It's like I think she would have been smart to apologize, say I was young and stupid ages ago, because people have been forgiven for much less faster. But not issuing that apology made it drag out a long period of time. But again, do people deserve a second chance at some point? I'd like to think so.
All right. Ramin here says, how influential were the Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn matches in ECW when you compare that to wrestling today?
It's hard because what does influential mean?
Did a lot of people watch those matches and try to recreate that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, but there was a lot of matches like that, you know, if you want to go back to, you know, Jerry Lynn and The Lightning Kid, you know what I mean? Or Sabu and the Lightning Kid. Like, people were tape trading to find those matches and trying to copy and emulate. It's like, there's matches like Dynamite Kid, Tiger Mask. There's matches like that throughout the years. Everyone's always, now it's Will Ospreay matches. Like, I'm not trying to sell them short. They were incredible, and they were one of the more noteworthy matches to be produced in ECW, but I don't know what level of influence you want to attach to them. There was a lot of guys, you know, busting their ass and working hard and doing stuff. So, like, those guys were incredible, and they may be the greatest matches to come out of ECW. I don't know, but I don't know about how influential they were. You'd probably have to ask people younger than me, because I was there at the time and not actively being influenced by them, because I was doing my own thing.
Yeti Pot Pie here says, has Lance had any paranormal experiences?
You're looking at, like, the world's greatest skeptic.
I know, but you know what's funny, Lance, is I also am generally a very skeptical person. And in fact, I do not believe in ghosts, like apparitions, but I freaking saw one in Hawaii. And Whitney was right there in the car with me, and she did too, and it was the weirdest thing that ever happened to me. So whether you're a skeptic or not, have you had any paranormal experiences?
I have not had any experiences that could not be reasonably explained.
Mm. Wow. Well, have you been listening to After Dark?
Mostly.
As a skeptic, what do you make of this? Anything that you're like, you know what? Maybe.
I like the guests you have that are not making their living based off people believing in the paranormal. The ones that studied, the vampire guy that studied more the folklore of it.
Sure.
I found him very interesting. But when you get the ones that seem to be trying to perpetuate people's beliefs because that's how they make their living, I think that they're just another level of con man working it.
Wow. All right, this person here, La Flame. Can Lance give his insight on the current state of TNA from someone that is employed there rather than the internet narratives I have been seeing recently? Well, LaFlame, I should ask, what are the internet narratives that you have been seeing recently? We should begin with that, but you can talk about how it is, Lance.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's the recent, stories, rumors, reports of, you know, many people leaving and the speculation that we're in trouble. And from all of the accounts that I have heard, our business has all been picking up. Our attendance has been going up. Our app TNA Plus subscriptions have been going up. The view of our specials and pay-per-views have been going up. From all accounts that I can tell, our business is doing well. Dave talks about everybody's cold, you know, ticket sales aren't good. It's like, our ticket sales are currently the best it's been in my 3 years in the company. You know, we're not selling out stadiums and arenas like WWE, but per TNA, I've been there for 3 years now, and obviously the pandemic before that, this is the best our ticket sales have been in, I think, over 5 years, probably closer to 10. So I think TNA is doing well. I mentioned this actually to Brian just in a text, but it's like, you know, the rumors that, you know, Josh is going to experiment with free agency, and there's the rumors that Jordan Grace is leaving and Speedball Mike Bailey is finished up. And it's like, a case can be made. And I don't want to shortchange the hard work and talent of these three individuals, because they're obviously fantastic, but their success is also a credit to TNA for giving them a platform, booking them well, allowing them to grow and become these great performers. So if they do end up leaving, it's like, it's a credit to the company doing things well, but clearly we don't have the deep pockets of a Tony Khan or a TKO. So if, I think it's inevitable that the talent that we best get over, and they get over, again, I don't want to take credit away from them. It's like, that's a natural progression. And others that apparently are finishing up, it's like, many of them we weren't doing that much with. So I think TNA is still in really good shape. I think we've had a fantastic 2024, and I'm very optimistic of a really good 2025. Our big shows have been fantastic.
All right, this person here, this would be Omega 579. Reading everyone's name today. Thoughts on the Javon Evans blood splatter? Did you see this? What's if it was comically excessive?
I've watched 2/3 of the NXT show, so I've not gotten to that. I did laugh at the, and again, they've got to, that's the whole point, but the overdramatic hype for the hallowed halls of the Lowell Civic Auditorium.
Yes.
I'm just like, I've been in the business 34 years and I've never thought once about, you know, the importance of the Lowell Civic Auditorium.
Well, you were missing out. This is where Sean lost his smile. One of the most remembered angles. It wasn't even an angle. It was kind of an angle. It was an angle to him.
But the thing is, and now granted, I've always been this way. I'll have other guys that will be like, oh, this is where something happened. And I'm just like, did it? Okay. Like, I never remember the building or the town. Like, obviously I remember Mania, X8 at Sky Dome. And I remember the global warning or warming in, no global warning, in, Sydney, but was it Sydney or Melbourne? See, I'm off on that one even, but it's like, there's certain big shows I'll remember, but it's like, someone pointed out that I guess I've had an incredible number of title wins in Buffalo. I'm just like, really? Okay. I didn't know that. I don't remember towns and buildings particularly well.
I will say that I did not find it to be comically excessive. There was definitely a lot of vomiting of blood, but it was just enough to be like, that's disgusting. But not enough to be, that's ridiculous.
Well, so, hopefully he's not on the show next week if it was that excessive.
Well, they taped the show, so I'd have to check. But I don't think he is. Don't think he's on the show.
Hope not. If you're going to do that heavy of an angle.
It was pretty heavy angle.
Off for a little while.
Not going to lie. It would have messed me up for years if I'd have been 8 watching that. Let me tell you. Terry here says, is Blue Sky fun for you both? It's comfortable.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go as far to say fun. I don't spend as much time on social media as I used to. And I think, too, and this is just because I tend to not have a lot of wide interests. It's like apart from books and wrestling, I don't have dogs. I don't have a lot of things to talk about. So the fact that there's fewer wrestlers on Blue Sky yet, I don't interact as much. Threads was the same way. When I finally tapped out on Twitter, my interaction and my time spent on social media really dropped because there was just fewer of my friends on the platform to interact with. So as it hopefully picks up, I will have more quote unquote fun, as much as Lance Storm has fun, but I'm happy enough with the platform. I do like that. Unlike Threads, Blue Sky does have a direct message platform.
I will say this about Threads. No, I'm sorry, Blue Sky. I mean, it's better, but right now it's better because there's no one on it. I mean, I was up there this weekend, and I still had just as many, you know, people get so angry, they get so mad.
You were pulling a Dave on Blue Sky there last week.
I know, I was like, I thought this place was better. It's like, I'm better off with my super followers on X, to be honest with you. I mean, I actually had a guy...
Just don't engage in dumb arguments, Brian.
It's not even engaging in a dumb argument. He was trying to explain to me that Tony and... Or Mina and Mariah had been feuding for 8 months. I was like, no, they haven't. It started with me saying it was a two-week feud. And he was like, that's disingenuous. This thing's been going on. I was like, I said it was a two-week feud. And it was. That's what a feud is. The feud didn't start when they were friends. And I even asked him, I was like, tell me, when did they split? He was like, 2 weeks ago. I was like, okay, they've been feuding for 2 weeks. Like, why are we arguing this for like 6 hours on a Saturday?
takes two to argue, dude.
It does, but man, I just kept being told blue sky's better, blue sky's better, blue. It's like it's exactly the same. There's just 1/100th of the number of people on there, so you have 1/100th of the idiots. But it's like it's still the same thing.
Well, 1/100th of the idiots is better.
It is better, but that's why it's better. Like if blue sky grows to what the size of Twitter, it will be just as terrible as Twitter. And then a new one will come along, which will be great for a while because there's like 30 people on it. But then it'll grow to the side and it'll suck. You can't have good social media. Has no one figured this out yet? You can't have good social media. It's impossible. As long as people can disguise their identity, it's going to always suck.
Well, yeah, and I've mentioned this a few times. It's also, unfortunately, arguing and negativity creates more interaction, and there's a lot of people that desperately want engagement, where it's like, I could give two shits if my posts get engagement or not. If I see someone say something that I have interest in commenting on, I will comment. And if I think of something that I think might be worth commenting, I'll post it. But I don't give an ounce of thought whether this post got this many views, this much interaction. Like you see it all the time. When Blue Sky started, it's the, oh, there's more engagement here. I'm like, ugh. I'm the guy that fucking hides in the corner so I don't have to talk to people. I don't care about engagement.
There's more engagement on Blue Sky?
Well, I think the theory, and actually I went and checked once. I just recently posted a picture of my one dog. Maybe it was when I posted a picture of both dogs. I posted it on my Instagram, my Threads, and my Blue Sky. And I have twice as many followers on Threads and twice as many of that on Instagram. And when I went and looked, the Instagram likes, views, whatever the fuck it is, was slightly higher. But my Threads and my Blue Sky were the same, despite having twice as many followers. So maybe engagement from your followers is higher because I got as many engagements from my 4,000 followers as I did from my 8,000 followers. I don't know.
Well, my theory is because there are less people on Blue Sky, all of those people are following fewer people. And so as they scroll through, they see the picture of your dogs. Whereas on Instagram, they're following 95,000 social media influencers and they have to scroll for 30 minutes to get to your dogs. And so I think it's not so much that there's more engagement. It's that there's everyone's following fewer people. So they see more of the posts of the people that they follow.
Fewer chicks in bikinis to distract them from
exactly.
My dog
post. Exactly. I don't know why those keep showing up on my feed. It just doesn't make any sense. Grayson says, I once recorded a commercial for a Lethbridge College radio station that put down the city of Vancouver and its people. Was I realistic in the rivalry between Calgary and Vancouver?
Well, Lethbridge isn't Calgary. Lethbridge is a different city.
Grayson, what are you doing here, brother? Is it close to Calgary?
It's about a 2-hour drive.
Okay, well, yeah, it's closer than Vancouver.
I can't imagine anyone in Vancouver really knows where Lethbridge even is.
This person wants to know, this is Jason, who has the bigger Border Patrol a-holes, the American side or the Canadian side? It's whatever side you're not, right? The Canadians are like, I don't trust this American coming into this country. Well, that's but when I'm going back to America, they're like, all right, see you, buddy.
Well, that's sort of the whole thing, right? If I'm crossing into Canada, I have my Canadian passport. They're like, oh, you belong here.
Yeah, welcome. Come on in, brother.
But when I'm going to the States, they want to make sure I'm not going to be an illegal alien or so forth. So again, whichever way you're going, if you're going home to your home country, they tend to be nicer to you than if you're a foreigner going to a foreign country.
Unless you're Vinny and you drop your license like a numbskull. All right. Michael here says, should Dustin get a run with the Ring of Honor world title? Sure. Why not? That's actually the answer to a lot of these questions in 2024. Sure, why not?
If it's about title belts at this point, yeah. What does it matter? Everybody has a million belts. Like I guess it's the graphic for tonight's. There's a Christmas-themed Dynamite tonight, right? I forget the name of the show. Maybe it's next Wednesday. But there's the graphic that I see online, and it's got the the Death Riders versus whoever the other three guys that they're having their match with. It's this big trios match. And I saw it and I go, oh, wow, that's a really big match. Cool. You know, Darby's in it, Jay White's in it, and so forth and so on. And I thought, I was like, oh, these are two really big trios teams. And I'm like, who the hell are the AEW trios champions? And I'm like, I have no idea. And I remember you putting over how great of a thing it was when Dustin and the Von Erich boys won the Ring of Honor trios champions. And I'm like, are they still champions? I've never seen them. I don't know. I just, I'm to the point where I'm not sure what most title runs mean.
All righty. We have got a Yeti pot pie again. Oh, we're on the subject of belts. If you could bring any title back from the past for one night only, well, what title would that be? Besides the Winged Eagle, of course.
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't. I think it really, to me, it feels like you're adding to the perception that these are all just random trinkets, pieces of jewelry, when you just change it. It's like, I always, you mentioned the, was it a Mexican title or something that's been like, you know, looked like it was the original from like 80 years ago or something. And to me, you have this lineage when the title belt is the same. And if Cody won the big WWE logo one that he has currently, and it's like, oh, tonight I'm going to wear this one. It's like, it just feels like you're wearing a fake belt, because that's not the one you won. It's not the one you defend all the other times. So to me, it just makes it feel more like custom jewelry rather than a sports trophy. Like I don't know, maybe they've changed it over the years, but I get the impression that the Stanley Cup's the same fucking Stanley Cup from ages ago. Like, they might have made a new one because the other one was falling apart, but they keep it the same. So it has, you know, the appearance of continuity. And same thing with the Grey Cup, I assume. I don't know. I don't follow sports all that much. But to me, to just, oh, I'm going to come out and wear a different looking one tonight, I've never been a fan of that. And I never liked the custom ones, like when they did the Smoking Skull one and stuff. I always was more of a traditionalist. If you're going to bring one back, bring it back permanently.
All righty. This person here, TS Type R. What are your thoughts on AJ Francis' development in TNA so far? That might be his burner.
AJ want me to put him over. I haven't seen all of the main event from Final Resolution, but what I saw was quite good, and I've heard, actually listened to Vinny, and he put it over really big. I think AJ's coming a long way in TNA. He's a very big, athletic, big man, and he's got chance to cut promos. He's always been good at that. And I think the single match he had with Nick probably opened some people's eyes. I think he's doing really well.
All righty. Oh, La Flame was answering. I feel the negative comments on TNA are coming from people who aren't watching TNA, just putting their two cents on anything that's controversial. Well, that does happen a lot on social media.
That it does.
Not just about wrestling promotions either.
Oh, but
often
everything.
Also podcasts. Sherman here says, why were there so many ref bumps in Attitude Era WWE? There were like six a week back then. Yeah, because they got over.
Well, also, too, it's like, if you go back to the Attitude Era, especially in the prime Vince Russo era, either in WWE or in WCW, there was a lot of everything. If anything seemed like it made anything bigger, more newsworthy, more controversial, it's like they did it. There was ref bumps. There was title changes like three times a week. There was people getting stripped naked on a couple times a show. There was gimmick matches on every show. The Attitude Era really was the era of, what's the word I'm looking at? Gluttony to a certain extent. It's just more, more, more. Let's do it. It was a crash TV era.
All right. We got some of my super followers here. Tony says, Lance, how do the current departures of performers affect locker room morale? or your job as an agent?
Well, it affects my job as an agent a little bit in that, you know, if Josh Alexander does leave us as an example, it's like, A, he's a friend of mine and I really enjoyed seeing him at work, but also two, he was a really great wrestler that was very easy to agent. And the longer and more familiar you are with someone, the easier it is because you know their stuff and therefore it's easier to see coming and coordinate with. So that's makes it more challenging, but it's also more interesting too when the roster gets shaken up. It's, you know, you've seen it when Cody jumped at WWE, it was like, ooh, that seemed more exciting now. And the Motor City Machine Gun Show is more exciting now. Well, we're going to, I assume, if we end up losing a few people, we'll be adding people like Tessa Blanchard. So a fresh new locker room has its rewards, as well as it's also sad to see some of your friends go, but that's been the wrestling business for my entire career and long before that. You know, when I was working in War with Jericho, it was great. And then he left. It's like, oh, he went to ECW. And it's like, that's the wrestling business. Everybody keeps moving around. And I think fresh, shuffled locker rooms keeps the product fresh.
All right. Andrew here says, apologies if this question is already asked, but Lance, past or present, which wrestler would you like to have worked with that you didn't? And which one are you glad you never worked with?
Who can I throw under the bus?
Vince McMahon.
I'd have been. I'm perfectly content never of wrestling him or Shano. I think the one, if I had to pick, I think probably Steamboat. Where again, in a weird way, like I was a bigger Bret Hart fan, but Bret also to me is the ring general that runs stuff. And if I'd worked with Bret, I'd have had to been the one to follow. Where Steamboat seemed really, really good at being that babyface that let the heel dictate and just call it out there and react with. So I think I would have really enjoyed Ricky Steamboat's style of work, and I could have been the heel that worked with him and directed traffic, and I really would have enjoyed that a ton. So he may be one of my tip-top, boy, if I could have picked one, a relatively young Ricky Steamboat would have been very, very high on the list. Someone that I'm really glad I didn't. I'm just trying to think of... Oh, I'm certainly happy I didn't work with Nathan Jones. That guy was... Mm. And again, not to bear... Again, I think I said probably five words with him the two times I met him, but obviously he was not a great worker, but him being so much bigger than me would have involved me taking a whole lot of big bumps and probably stiff kicks from him. It would have been a challenge that probably did me no favors, so I'm perfectly fine without that.
All right, let's see. Scott here says, what's the biggest move from when you broke in that you think is missing today? Like the old school backdrop? Any moves like that you don't see nowadays anymore?
Actually, it's starting to come back a little bit.
Yeah?
There's still a few people that'll take a backdrop. Always happy every time I see AJ Styles take one because it is a bit of a dying breed.
You know what's funny is I used to hate taking bumps, but man, I love taking backdrops.
Well,
it's a high bump.
But it's, and I've talked about this a million times over the years we've been doing this, but it's one of those classic, you get to take your own bump.
Yes.
And once
I like taking my own bumps.
When you learn how to take one, it's one of the bigger, more impressive bumps that you're almost entirely in control of yourself for. Like a really shitty guy can fuck you up on it. But as long as a guy's relatively competent, it's a nice big bump. But it was really dying out there for a while because I think people getting into the business were so into their moveset and their offense that the business to a large extent became, these are the moves I'm going to do. Everybody will have to learn how to take them. Where in the, say 90s and earlier, the moves were far more universal and you learned to take the bumps. And as a heel, you'd pick the bumps you want to take to get your baby face over. So you would take hip tosses and backdrops. And again, you know, you look at a Ric Flair, you watch his matches, he predominantly takes the same bumps, the bumps that he's comfortable with, and it may be why he lasted so damn long, rather than having to take the moves that these other people come up for you to take.
Yeti here says, will Lance come to Vegas for the convention and wrestle Filthy Tom in the undercard of Vinny versus Craig? Well, there's a lot about that that's not happening, my friend.
Yes.
A lot.
All of that is not happening.
Yes.
I'm not, no way am I traveling going anywhere Mania weekend unless it's to TNA shows. And I'm not wrestling again. And I can't imagine I would work the undercard of Vinny and Craig.
All right.
Although I'd be interested in wrestling Tom if I were younger.
Sure. I wrestled him once. I survived. Bobby here says, Canadian bacon is just ham, you know.
Not exactly, but close enough, sure.
Well, now he wants to argue that. What do you mean, not exactly? How is it not ham?
It's slightly different.
But it's Canadian, and it's bacon.
No.
Yes, it is.
Hey, moving on.
It comes from a pig. He's not going to accept that answer.
So does a lot of stuff.
All right, LaFlame here says, do TNA and New Japan still have a working relationship before the NXTNA partnership started? There was a lot of integration. Not so much after. Can we look forward to more stuff in 2025 or no?
I have no idea. That's above my pay grade. According to Dave, Kushida had both a TNA and a New Japan contract. So we had some degree of a relationship up until recently. But I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I don't get advance heads up on creative. I don't get advance heads up on working arrangements. I deal with the people that I deal with at the tapings. Leave it at that.
All right, Bobby here says, as many of the big events sell tickets before a card announcement, it takes away some from being able to label anyone a draw. I guess what necessity, what would you say is evidence of being a draw nowadays?
Well, yeah, you certainly can't, like, whoever headlines WrestleMania, it's like you can't take credit for the ticket sales because it'll be sold out before anybody knows who's the main event or what night you're on. So you can't draw. You could certainly, if there were consistent, your quarter hour always had more viewers than that quarter hour when other people were in it, then you could lay claim to being a draw. If you do meet and greets and such stuff, because again, with us currently right now, like Matt and Jeff Hardy are draws for us. Like, we've been having, you know, we have post-show meet and greets and so forth, and it's like, they'll be there till 2 a.m. because the line's so big. No one else we've ever done post-show meet and greets with have had the volume of people showing up as Matt and Jeff are currently. So Matt and Jeff are definitely draws for us currently. And again, it also is coinciding with good ticket sales, which I'm assuming people are buying the ticket sales and the meet and greets and stuff all together. So you can certainly claim they're a draw for us. Now, again, I'm not saying that if they were on a WWE show or an AEW show, they may not significantly change the numbers there, but they are changing them for us. And again, if someone in WWE, when they do ticket on sales or meet and greets or other type attractions, you know, signings and so forth, if, you know, they're doing a ticket on sale and they have Cody Rhodes there, if they have a bigger turnout than when they have Randy Orton there, then Cody's a bit more of a draw. But yeah, as far as actual ticket sales to events, most events now either sell out before there's even a card, or at least the predominant volume of tickets is sold before they even get there. And even, I don't know if this is still the case, but I know a couple of years ago I'd asked Dave, you know, because they was, you know, mentioned that, oh, so-and-so's, you know, WWE's top merch seller right now. And I'd ask him, it's like, are merch sales spiking? Or is just that person pulling in a bigger percentage of what their regular average merchandise sales are. And he said at the time, at least, predominantly it's just they draw a bigger percentage of the pie, but the pie's not actually getting bigger. In which case, you're not really drawing any money if they annually sell $1 million worth of merch every single year. If you happen to be drawing a bigger percentage of that this year, and then when LA Knight caught fire, he drew a bigger percentage, and now when Roman Reigns or The Rock, it's like if it's still $1 million pie, you're not actually drawing anything. You're just the person, the people that are always buying stuff happen to be interested in at the time. So it's a lot harder than it used to be.
This guy says, isn't it back bacon?
There's pea meal bacon, there's back bacon. No one calls it Canadian bacon, but foreigners.
Like French fries?
French is about the cut, not the country.
But I don't think anyone in France talks about French fries.
But it has nothing to do with
Americans.
The country.
What do you mean it's the cut?
It has nothing to do with the country.
What do you mean the cut? A cut of a potato?
Yeah, you French the potato, I believe. But it's more about how it's prepared. Nothing to do with the country, which was the absurdity of the freedom fries, because we're mad at France.
What about French toast? French fries. That's cut completely different from French fries.
French fries have nothing to do with France.
I don't know if I trust you on this one. Since when were you a culinary expert?
My wife is.
Well, get her on the show. I'm going to ask her. I bet she'd have a different answer. All right. This person here says, do you miss performing in front of the crowd, Lance? Brian, same for you.
Not really,
Who wants to start?
I went to a local show here. My buddy Chris Knight, who's a former student of mine, really good friend. He worked Effie, and they had a really good, fun live event match. And I really enjoyed watching it. And when you're watching, I think it's like, man, that'd be fun to do again. But to be honest, being a part of a real, like if I'm agenting, you know, pick a match, it doesn't matter, you know, Eddie Edwards versus Nick Nemeth as an example. It's like, if I sit with them during the day and we pool our brains and come up with ideas for the match and stuff, and then they go out and work and it's like, it's going great and it's clicking. It's like, I'm sitting backstage and I'm as happy and rewarded as I was when I had the match myself. So agenting and coaching still provides me that excitement and creative outlet, I guess. So I don't really miss working. And obviously my body doesn't miss it at all. So,
you know, when I broke in way back in the day, Lance, I was a big fan of Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect and all these guys who were great. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I remember when I did indies, like I was never as good as those guys. I was never great.
No kidding.
But I had a intense desire to not suck. Okay. And I think that like when I did indies, like there were so many guys on the show, they were just happy to be on the show. They just wanted to get out there in front of the people and have people chant their name and, you know, slap their hands. And I was never about that. I was always about, I'm a wrestler. And I want to get out there and I want to have the best match on the show if I can. And so I never enjoyed being in the ring. It was always like, God damn it. I remember arriving at the building and I'd be like, what the fuck am I doing here? I mean, part of that also was because like often I would work people who weren't very good. I'd be like, God damn it. I drove all the way out here and I'm wrestling, you know, I won't mention any names, Vinny. But there'd be that misery at the beginning. And then like, you know, you're waiting for your match and you're just like, I just had so much, I don't want to suck. I just don't want this match to be bad. And then, like, you go out there, and then it's all about, I'm going to do everything I can to not suck. And then it wasn't until the match was over, and I went through the curtain, when it was done, that it'd be like, didn't suck. I wasn't bad. And then I'd feel really good, and it'd be like, God damn, well, fuck, you know, we got another show in a month. I'd be all ready for that next show. But then it was the same thing again. Like the day, I'd be all worried leading into it. I'm like, God, I got to do my cardio. I got to get in shape. Like, you know, and then you get to the building, same thing again. God damn it. I'm with so-and-so tonight. What the fuck am I going to do with this guy? Like, I got to think of something. And then, like, I was almost always the one that put the matches together. Because it was always like, what can I do with sloth? I mean, I got to figure out something here. And then, you know, you come up with this match and you're like, this guy can't do that. I got to think of something even simpler. And you just try and put it together, anything you can to make sure when you went out there, no matter what, at least it didn't suck. And it was just stress and pressure. I never enjoyed, like, God. No, I don't want to do it again. God, I'm 50 now almost.
Maybe I was lucky or had more talent and confidence than you, but I also was...
You worked with better guys. You weren't on the indies.
That I was very fortunate that very quickly, and I think it was because, A, I picked the job up fairly quickly in an era when being light and safe was important, and I was both of those things almost immediately, that the veteran top guys wanted to work with me. Because it was, again, you know, the Jerry Morrows, the Johnny Smiths, the Gamma Sings, and so forth here locally that didn't want to work with the sloths and the other shitty guys. So when they realized...
Not saying that, sloth was shitty, but...
Okay, I don't even know who the guy is, so... But that they wanted to work with me, so I got to. And the fact that I'm working with guys that can call a great match and all I have to do is provide the athleticism, it's like they were easy, they were fun. And so I didn't have too many of the, oh God, I got to work with this guy. There were a couple, but for the most part, they weren't like that. So I was very fortunate.
Well, you're right, but there's also the other kind of stress because like when I started, it was like I just worked with other nerds. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, how the hell do I have a good match with this guy? Like, he can't do anything. And then it's all stressed out to try to figure out how to make it work. But then, you know, one day, Buddy Wayne wants to work with you. He wants you to go to Oregon and work with him. And then it's like, holy shit, like... There's a part of it, it's like, I don't have to do anything now. He's going to do the whole thing.
This is a completely different job.
Yeah, it's a different kind of stress now. It's like, fuck, what if he says to do this spot and I do another spot? What if I fuck this out and you're stressed out the whole time? And then you'd work with Tim and he's like, we're doing an Iron Man match next month. Oh yeah, what are we going to do? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We have to go in out. Don't worry about it. And then like the day of the show, now it's the day of the show. What are we going to do? Don't worry about it. Just listen. Well, like, I mean, nope. It didn't tell me anything, nothing. So can you, like I'm supposed to go out there and enjoy 60 minutes with Tim Flowers where he didn't tell me anything. He's going to call the whole thing and I can't fuck up. I don't even know who's going to win. I mean, I knew he was going to win, but he didn't tell me. It was obvious, but fuck.
We knew the finish, but I did that to Randy Orton. I think it was his first televised match when he got called up from developmental. So I assume it was on Heat. And again, maybe he had another one, but it was the first time he and I worked. And I had heard he was good. And it was Heat. And I remember him coming to me and it's like, you know, you want to get in the ring and, you know, work some stuff out? I'm like, no, I'm good. You want to just roll around and sort of feel each other a little bit? I'm like, no, I'm all right. It's like, what are we doing? I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. It's like, well, we had our finish and it's all, because it's like, I heard he was good. So it's like, he had 9 minutes on Heat. It's like, I can call anybody through 9 minutes on Heat, let alone somebody who actually I've heard is good. And it was at a time where, you know, Vince and agents wanted us to work more and, you know, show these young kids at a developmental that, you know, you don't have to choreograph shit. You can just work. So it was half a rib and also half, I thought it would be a good experience where it's just like, no, I'm okay. I don't need to get in the ring. And I think he may have been a little nervous. And then we had a really good match and I wrestled Randy a ton and I love Randy. He's a great guy. And we always had fun in the ring and always got along.
Alrighty. French bacon is when you make out with Kevin Bacon, Bobby says.
Important information to have.
That's a great way to wrap up this show. Why don't you tell us about Escaping Denver?
Yes, the scripted podcast that I'm part of. I think there's one or two more episodes this season. But yeah, I'm a character. I play the archivist. There are three in a bit. Seasons out. You can stream them all if you want, where podcasts are found. It's really an interesting show. I do highly recommend it. I make my first appearance in season 3 and have a much bigger role in season 4. And I think season 5 is being written as we speak. It's a lot of fun. Wherever you get your podcast, Escaping Denver, there's actually quite a few wrestling people in it. Brady Malibu or Brady Roberts, whichever you know him as. He's a big part of the show. He's one of the main characters, but Taya and Johnny have both been characters in it. Chelsea Green's been a character in it. Myself, obviously, Brady, our friend Paul Lazenby, the man who pantsed Brian back in the day. He played a character in it briefly. So there's a lot of, if you give it a listen, you can try to.
You wonder why I hated it. It's another added stress. Is someone going to pull my pants down today? God. Probably deserved it. You should have seen my gear. Yeah, I probably would have pantsed myself, to be honest.
Back in that day, getting your pants pulled down was the least of your worries in a match.
It's true.
It was a...
He's actually put me over. He goes, I tried so hard to get your underwear down. Couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. This is a guy who fought in Pancras.
Yeah. Fighter could not get my underwear down. That's how well I fought. And he was trying. Yeah, with help from two other dudes. Including Luther. That's another one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got to wrap
Dastardly
it up, everybody.
Dastardly people.
Yeah. So Lance is here every week. If you're listening for free, sign up at WrestlingObserver.com or... You can also sign up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And the address is there for ease is f4wonline.com/Spotify, f4wonline.com/Apple, or f4wonline.com/YouTube. 84 podcasts every month. Lance and I do a live Q&A once a month. A lot of fun stuff, everybody, so check it out. I'll be back later on tonight with Dave. Observer Live is already up. Lots of stuff. Check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.